So, Paul, we're in our final quarter hour today on Squawk 1200. We still don't have VFR, so we're still not technically able to Squawk 1200, are we?
Yeah, we'll have to do our best. Maybe later today, but it's just another day in Oshkosh where you never know what you'll get, right?
The international. But here's one thing you know you'll get every day at 1245 on Squawk 1200, a visit from folks at the International Federal Partnership.
That's right.
Those agencies and other entities that are exhibiting in the Federal Pavilion come by to talk about what it is that they are hearing and seeing and saying. And so we welcome Nicholas Georgieff from the National Park Service. Hi, Nicholas. Good to meet you.
Good afternoon.
Welcome. It's good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
This is the 100th anniversary of the National Park Service. So you guys are partying all year.
That is correct, Mike, is that we actually kind of started a little bit early. We kind of started in October of last year, officially kicking everything off on January 1st. And throughout this year, there are a lot of centennial events that are going on nationwide that we invite the American public to join us in.
As long as they don't light the candles on the birthday cake, because that would be open flame, right?
Well, that would be a large flame, but they will be lighting the candles on August 25th, 2016, on the Washington Mall there in D.C. That is when the Park Service actually turns 100 by a bill that Woodrow Wilson signed nearly 100 years ago, creating the National Park Service.
That's great. Nicholas, tell us about yourself. What do you do for the Park Service?
Well, currently I am stationed at Dayton Aviation Heritage National Historical Park, and we are home of the Wright brothers and Paul Ernst Dunbar. And I'm sure most of your listeners are very familiar with the Wright brothers. But there's actually what I call the yin-yang story of that. Mostly everyone is familiar with their famous flight on December 17th, 1903, there in North Carolina. However, the Wright brothers are actually from Ohio, and they did a lot of their experimentation and early development of what that aircraft needed to look like in Dayton, Ohio. And then the yang part of the story is that on October 5th, 1905, is that in 1903, they proved that flight was possible, but they made flight practical on October 5th, 1905.
And what happened then?
Well, that's when actually the Wright brothers were able to put a Wright Flyer into the air and stayed up for nearly 39 minutes doing figure eights, flying in circles and things like that. And they only landed when they ran out of fuel. At that point, they now made flight practical because they could take off and land when they wanted. But more importantly, while they were in the air, they could maneuver.
So what kind of marker or special place is there where that happened?
Oh, in Huffman Prairie?
Yeah.
Well, actually, Huffman Prairie is kind of a neat story in itself, is that it really was, again, early days of flight. There's no airports and things like that around. And so the Wright brothers, being from Dayton, an urban area, they actually had a friend that owned a piece of land outside of town, which today is now Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And the Wright brothers went over and asked him, can we use your land? You know, you have some open areas. And this is not official. In my mind, it's like the precursor to the FAA. he actually said, okay, my area is all fenced in. He had adjacent neighbors. And he said, you can use my area. Here are the following rules, though. You have to make sure that the gate is closed and no cows get out. You cannot fly over anybody's land other than his, so they could see the fence, and they had to stay within that, and you could not disturb any additional wildlife. Not very much, but at the same time, then the Wrights, they honored that because, again, he wasn't charging them for it. And so as far as markers, what's out there, it's a prairie, pretty open. Again, it was farming. Cows were out there. But in the center of the field, there was a grove of locust trees. And those locust trees are the descendants of the original trees that were there. And so it's very identifiable in that respect. And fortunately, it's also the site of a crash that Orville Wright had as part of his flight testing.
Amazing. I bet not too many people knew that story.
I haven't heard that story.
I'm a little bit speechless because I'm thinking, wow, did I ever hear anything about this? And I don't think I did.
No, well, see, this, like I said, goes back to the yin-yang story. You need both sites to tell the stories of the Wright brothers. Yeah. Is that right now we're very fortunate is that the development of the aviation industry really occurred in Dayton, Ohio. I'm talking about where they actually built factories for the sole purpose of making airplanes, and that's the Wright Company factory, literally just a few miles down the road. And when GM, later Delphi, took over the plants or the buildings, it's hard to believe that they've really never modified them. And even though they had a total of five buildings, building one and two is what was the Wright Company factory. Buildings three and four and five were added later on. Unfortunately, Delphi, as they went bankrupt and things like that, these buildings were actually safeguarded to the point that they now can become part of the Park Service. However, buildings one and two are 90% original fabrication in the buildings. It's really kind of amazing that after 100 years that these buildings are still almost original.
We're talking with Nicholas Georgeff, who's part of the National Park Service based in Ohio. Nicholas, what kinds of questions are you hearing from folks, and what kind of messages are you conveying through your exhibit at the Federal Pavilion?
Well, this year we have a lot of great things going on to help celebrate the centennial with the American public. One that we just finished up is that we sponsored Lieutenant Commander retired Lou Conter, a USS Arizona survivor. He was featured at Theater in the Woods on Wednesday. Earlier today, he just presented a forum for us about reflections of a survivor, fielding a few questions from the audience. And right now, he's getting ready to participate in the EAA Veterans Appreciation Parade. In addition, we also have the EAA 1903 Wright Simulator that we sponsor here in the pavilion. We use volunteers to help staff that, and it's a fun time. Is that right before I came over, there was a five-year-old kid who was very happy that he finished, and he actually was successful, and he couldn't wait to get his little stamp, and we give him a simulator pilot license. He was actually very happy. We also have junior ranger programs, multiple different ones dealing with aviation, the 50th anniversary of the National Historic Preservation Act, and also just for this year, it's called National Park Service on the Air for amateur radios operators. We actually, through in the pavilion, we operate from 12 to 2, where the station is open and you can call in and record your call sign. And if you, when you have so many call signs, you can actually get a certificate of different levels. But we also have a little junior ranger badge for that. In addition, we also do an hourly book giveaway dealing with some aspect of the Wright brothers and aviation. There's really a lot going on within our exhibit. We also have a green screen, so you can have your photo taken with the Wright brothers. But today, in honor of military appreciation, we actually have it focused on the USS Arizona Memorial called World War II Valor in the Pacific. And I believe it's in Building 445 is a specific exhibit dealing with the memorial here on the grounds. We, however, in the Federal Pavilion, we have a green screen doing that today, and there's no cost for any of this.
So tell me the truth now. Have you flown the Wright Flyer Simulator successfully?
Yes, I have.
I'm not sure I can do that.
I have to admit, you know, the thing that I always find amazing is that you have to use like three elements. Your left hand normally controls the elevator. Your right hand is a rudder. And your hips is controlling wing warping. And so I think I can walk. I think I can chew bubble gum at the same time. I am not sure I can walk, chew bubblegum, and talk at the same time. And that's really what you have to do when you're flying the simulator, is that if you really think about what the Wrights accomplished, and specifically with self-funding between their print shop and bicycle shop business, it's really, really amazing on what they were able to achieve. The simulator, however, is very good in that the public that experiences it, they leave with a new appreciation for what the Wrights accomplished.
And it was just 100 years, or well, more than 100 years ago, but look at the development and look at some of the things that you see at EAA now that's occurred since the Wright brothers took that flight. It's amazing.
It is. You know, and I think about that because my father is going on 94, and he keeps telling me if I knew I was going to live so long, I would learn how to use computers. In that same spirit is that, okay, Orville Wright, okay, from a wood and fabric plane, was able to see a jet fly in his lifetime. I mean, that to me, we just like, it's kind of mind-boggling. But again, I know that during World War I and World War II specifically, there were major developments in aviation. But in his lifetime, I think that's pretty amazing.
Indeed.
So we've been talking with Nicholas Georgeff of the National Park Service. You know, I think sometimes that I'd like to put together a punch list of the national parks that I'd like to visit. There's how many grand total in the system?
Well, right now, as of today, we have 412 units of the National Park that are units of the National Park Service.
Well, I better get started.
That's a long list, Mike.
Well, actually, there's one unknown thing that most people are not aware is that the National Park Service Passport Association, it's a private nonprofit group. And again, the National Park Service is really a living entity. And what I mean by that is units constantly get added to the service. Well, if you visit all of the national parks where they call the passport program, you get a little stamp like an international passport going into different countries. It's just a fun way, something fun to do. But once you have visited all of the units that are active at that time within the system, not adding new ones, is that they actually come to EAA and they present that person, and they have with a little plaque in front of the 1928 Fairchild.
Wow, that's neat. Nicholas Georgeff for the National Park Service. Thanks so much for coming by today. You and your folks are at the International Federal Partnership of the Federal Pavilion, just a little bit north of our studio, actually. And, Paul, we're at the end of another Squawk 1200.
It's another great day. It's nice to be working with you, Mike.
It's a pleasure to be working with you this week as well. You're listening to Squawk 1200 on EAA Radio.